riding what looks an awful lot like a cordless stick vacuum. Winifred's the first one to touch down, and she swings the vacuum over her shoulder as she approaches.
"Three nasty children all in a row," she croons, "all dressed up, with no place to go." "Three nasty children and a dog," adds Travis.
The zombies freeze, watching us with vacant eyes. I see one, whose cloak looks much rattier than it did a few hours ago. I see Corey, too, and Adina, and Patsy, and several other people from school. None of them seems to recognize us or know what's going on.
"Thank you, my pets," Winifred says,
scratching the top of Jenny's head.
"Now, where's my book?"
They uniformly point at me. I hide the spellbook behind my back. Winifred turns to me and grins. Then she strides toward me, arms outstretched.
"We need to find a way back to your car," I say under my breath, glancing at Katie.
She's too busy staring, disbelieving at the witches. But she gives one quick nod.
"Ooh, he's just so handsome," says Sarah, batting her eyes at Travis.
Winifred stops short of me and puts a hand to her mouth.
"Smells like wet dog,"
she spits, squinting her eyes at Isabella. My blood boils at the dig.
"Looking for this?"
Travis shouts at her, waving the moonstone. It's just the distraction we needed.
"Go!"
shouts Katie, shoving Winifred aside, and we all make a break for it, maneuvering around the bench and the zombies and heading back toward the road leading to where Katie parked. Isabella and I hang right, while Travis and Katie take a left, and by splitting up, we seem to confuse the sisters, who spin around, shocked and torn as we pass them.
"Get them!"
shouts Winifred.
"Which one?"
asks Mary.
"The one with the stone, you miserable stockfish."
"Oh," there's a pause.
"Which one is that?" "Get them!"
Winifred shrieks again, and a few zombie kids turn toward us as if slowly puzzling out her command. Jenny reaches for me, and I twist away from her and plow into three basketball players. Two are in pajamas, but the other is dressed as a baby with a rattle. I quickly straighten and race ahead to catch up with my friends. We dodge into the thicket and emerge onto the road. The witches are still behind us and haven't moved from their spots. Ahead of us is the park ranger's booth, and beyond, the gate. Lucky for us, the zombie horde found a way to smash through the gates, so we won't have to climb over again. Unlucky for us, there are more zombies standing in our way between the open gate and where Katie's car sits somewhere on the other side. The place is packed. I can't figure out how to shove through them and make it out. And from the looks of it, neither can Katie or Travis.
"Go!"
shouts Isabella, ducking under some of their legs and skirting wide to avoid the gate altogether.
"I'll be fine," she calls back.
As much as I want to follow after her, I have no choice but to take her word for it.
I hope she'll be okay. The rest of us duck our heads down and shoulder people out of the way. Hands snatch at my hair and sweatshirt and limbs, seeking the book tucked under my arm. I elbow and twist and wriggle until I'm close enough to the gate that I can see Katie's car just where we left it. It's a relief that the zombies haven't already slashed its tires, and a relief that I've still got possession of the coveted book. Beside me, I hear Katie shout. It's a breathless, frightened sound, and I turn in time to see her body flying through the air, a lasso of green lightning wrapped around her waist. The door of the park ranger's booth opens, and she flies in, slamming hard into the back wall. She slumps to the floor, vanishing out of sight, just as the door slams shut after her, crackling with veins of electricity.
"No!"
I shout. Travis is already there at the booth, yanking on the door handle, but it won't give. A visible spark of electricity leaps from the handle into his body, and he falls backward into the mass of zombies, cursing as he clutches his right hand. In the same movement, the blood moonstone flies out of his hand and lands somewhere in the crowd. Zombies mumble indistinctly, and the crowd bristles around the spot where the stone landed.
Well, that backfired.
Travis's hand appears in the throng, giving a thumbs up.
"I'm okay!"
he shouts. I wish I could say the same for Katie and Isabella, but there's no sign of them. If anything happened to Isabella, I don't know what I'll do. The witches are now close by, cackling. Marching over to them, I fend off the zombies who claw at me, whacking one over the head with the book, until I'm face to face with Winifred and her two horrible sisters. I'm shaking with fear and anger, full on shaking, like I'm freezing cold and boiling hot at the same time. You're monsters, I scream. No, Winifred titters, batting a hand at me as if I'm just too much. Thou art too kind. She twists her wrist again, and another shock of lightning jumps from her fingertips to Travis, this time hitting him in the stomach as he emerges from the zombie mob. Hand me the book, or I light him up like a Christmas tree. Stop it, I yell, stomping even closer toward her. You're horrible. No, honey sop. Winifred takes a threatening step toward me, making me falter in my own forward advance. It's the world that's horrible. She trills her R's dramatically. I, she smiles coyly, regarding her sisters, who stand obediently by her side. We just want to rule it. I can hear banging, and I turn to see Katie pounding on the booth's window. Before me, Winifred raises her hand again. Energy crackles between her fingers like a deadly spider web. Leave them alone, I say through clenched, chattering teeth. Isabella's by my side. I'm right here, Poppy, she says. You got this. Winifred pretends to consider this, playing with the ball of green-tinged electricity in her palm. No. No, I don't think I shall. She snaps her fingers. Unless, I feel my heart sink into my stomach. Unless, I ask. Unless you hand over my book, she screams. Book! I feel the book come to life in my hands, and I realize that it must have fallen open as I've been holding it. I feel it move, like it's being pulled by a giant magnet, and it takes all my strength to maintain my grip on it. I dig my heels into the soil. It's pulling me toward Winifred, but I stop it in its tracks by finally managing to close it. As for the stone, I'll get it one way or another, girl. Thou might as well tell me where it is now, and spare thy friends the pain of losing their... What's the word, Mary? Bowels? Mary asks hopefully. I give her a disgusted look, then glance at where the stone landed, where the zombies stagger around, bumping their heads against one another as they scour the ground. The witches didn't see it land there, and the zombies apparently haven't found it yet. What do I do now? Yes, Winifred says, and a cruel smile comes over her face. That's it. Travis groans, and I turn to see him doubled over. A long bolt of electricity runs from Winifred's hooked fingers to his stomach. He clutches at his guts, trying to shield himself from her magic without much luck. His eyes are clenched shut, and he screams. I can barely look. Tisk, tisk, Winifred chides, closing in on Travis. If your friends would only hand over my book and my stone, then this could all stop. I consider throwing the book at Winifred to make her stop, and look down for a second opinion, but Isabella's nowhere in sight. Please be safe. Suddenly, Katie, who's been slamming the small windows of the booth with both of her fists, shatters a window with a bang. She stumbles through it, causing Winifred to freeze, turn toward Katie, and shoot a snake of electricity at her. The other witches turn toward Katie, too. Travis twitches on the floor in front of a semicircle of statuesque zombie onlookers. I'm about to throw myself at Winifred's turned back to tackle her when Travis catches my eye. He waves weakly at me and pantomimes holding a phone in his hand. He's telling me to answer my phone. Why? I feel my phone buzz in my pocket. I pull it out and see Travis's face grinning back at me. I answer because I trust that this is what Travis is motioning for me to do. He jabs a finger at his own mouth, miming a yell. Speakerphone. I put my phone on speaker.
Now where was I?
Asks Winifred in her shrill voice, turning back to Travis. Her voice is loud enough that both our mics pick her up. Two more Winifreds echo back.
Now where was I?
She looks around, startled, splayed hands at the ready, like she thinks someone is going to attack her.
Who said that?
She demands. My phone and Travis's answer.
Who said that?
You did, Winnie,
says Mary, and two Marys repeat her statement, too. I see Katie painstakingly dig her phone out of her pocket, and a second later, my phone starts to vibrate again. I merge her into the call with a covert swipe. Winifred is too busy searching the treetops to notice.
I summoned your past and future selves, Winifred Sanderson,
announces Isabella from somewhere in the bushes. She's too far away for our microphones to pick her up, but all of us can hear her loud and clear.
And the paradox of time travel says that if you meet one of your other selves, your world collapses. That's not true,
says Winifred, turning again. Now three voices echo shrilly back to her. She covers her eyes with both hands.
Winnie, I'm scared,
says Mary, scurrying over. I race past them to Travis and help him to his feet.
Are you okay?
I ask him, careful to keep my voice low.
Yeah,
he breathes. He regards the spellbook in my hand.
Pops, where's the stone?
He whispers.
I don't know.
I glance at the zombie mob. None of them seems to be proudly waving it.
What?
He whispers.
That's not good.
Well, the witches don't know either, I say. Let's count our blessings.
Go away,
shouts Winifred. Our phones are close enough now that they echo and echo in a repeated loop.
Make them go away!
The louder she yells, the louder the phones yell back. All three sisters are cowering now, covering their eyes to avoid seeing their other selves. Isabella runs through the clearing again, cackling with laughter this time. It reverberates through our phones, sharpening with static as it loops and loops and loops. Mary wails and buries her face in one of Winifred's sleeves. I shove Travis in the direction of the car and sprint to Katie, the spellbook still clamped firmly under my arm, with Winifred and her sisters looking away, and with the zombies now on their hands and knees crawling through the grass as they comb it for the moonstone. There's no one there to stop me as I help Katie up. She's shivering when I shove her toward the gate, too. Luckily, she seems okay. Travis is already waiting at the car, which is barely visible once again in the sea of zombies. But Katie's the one with the keys. When she unlocks it, the beep echoes through our phones, too. I freeze just as Winifred looks up, suspicious. Her lips purse as her mind works out the situation.
Step on it!
I shriek, racing with Katie for the gate. My own command mocks me as I elbow past a few dazed sophomores.
They tricked us,
says Winifred, incredulous. She shoves her sisters away and hustles after me. I'm over the gate and making my way through the assembly of zombies toward the car. Who cares that we don't have the moonstone? We can worry about it later. All that matters is we're all in one piece, for now. Katie climbs into the driver's seat and the car roars to life. Travis climbs in too, and I race in after him, followed by Isabella. Katie reverses with dirt flying, then pulls forward.
Drive!
I scream. A bolt of green lightning hits the windshield and the glass shatters.
No!
I cry out. The car swerves and hits a tree. The hood smokes silently.
Oh!
Travis groans.
Is everyone okay?
Asks Isabella. Another bolt of electricity pries the backseat door clean off the car. I look out at Winifred and her sisters, arm in arm and strutting toward me. With another flourish of her hand, Winifred sends her electric green lightning right at me. It slams me between the shoulders. I feel like I'm flying for a moment, and then I feel like a puddle of pain. My body falls out of the car and lands flat on the ground. And no one part of me hurts less than any other part. The spellbook is a foot away, face up in the grass, and I crawl forward and grab it. I hear the car door creak open behind me and Travis stumbles out. I'm not sure where Katie and Isabella are, but I hope they're unharmed.
Travis, run!
I gasp with whatever air is left inside my lungs.
Hell no!
He grunts, lifting me up, but the next shock of electricity hits us both. By the time Winifred stalks over to us, I'm a mess of limbs and pain. I want to push her away, but my brain seems to have lost coordination with my muscles. I'm helpless as she leans over us, smiling ever so sweetly, and yanks the book from my hands.
There, there, kitten, she says to me. Now is that so hard?
She gazes lovingly at the book in her talons.
My darling, Winifred croons. I knew you would find your way back to me.
The green eye on its cover blinks sleepily, making Winifred titter at it even more fondly.
Oh, I've missed you so, she simpers. Yes, I have.
She tickles the book like it's a cute newborn. From the corner of my eye, I see Isabella emerge from the car. In her mouth, she's got the blood moonstone. She drops it at her feet.
Leave my friends alone. It's me you want, she yells. What, mutt?
Shouts Winifred. She holds up the spell book triumphantly.
Every dog has its day.
She starts to cackle and throws a bolt of lightning in the direction of her several times removed great-grandniece's barking. Isabella picks the moonstone back up in her mouth and starts to take off.
Go, go, go!
Winifred grins.
And a zip, and a zap, and a zilch!
The lightning hits Isabella, and she collapses, dropping the stone instantly.
No!
All at once, the commotion around us fades away. Winifred continues to cackle, but everything that isn't Isabella becomes background noise. My heart jumps into my throat. I can't tell if she's breathing. Please be okay.
You yep, I zap,
Winifred cackles.
Sisters, grab the stone,
she commands. Her sisters try to make themselves useful. They stoop to grab it at the same time, knocking heads against each other, then attempt it once more with the same result. Winifred strolls over to them and swats them aside, then plucks up the stone and smiles. She looks up from the book and the stone and shouts,
My, our time has finally come. We shall bring Mother and Master back from beyond the veil. The exchange spell shall be complete when the sun rises, and we shall live forever.
Her lips curl over her teeth.
Now, seize the brats!
Her sisters move into action, reaching for a limp Isabella, who surprises them by righting herself and dashing off into the ferns. She's alive. Thank God. Mary and Sarah don't bother entertaining the idea of chasing her down. Instead, they drag a motionless Katie from the car and an unconscious Travis from the ground into the clearing of quiet, watchful zombies, where I lie, unable to do more than wiggle my toes.
Minions, leave us, commands Winifred.
The cell phone zombies disperse and head home in a daze. We failed. The witches won. I let my family down. I hope Travis and Katie are okay. At least Isabella got away. A pair of rough hands seizes me, and I know this is the end for all of us. With a disorienting lurch, we leap into the sky. Eternal Life Potion 2.0. My wrists are tied behind my back with bits of cloth that Winifred made a bereft Sarah rip from her dress, and as we float over Salem, I let my head loll back to avoid looking at the ground. Talk about a broom with a view. I see Winifred's wild hair arching past a backdrop of stars and wispy clouds. They have the spell book and the blood moonstone. We failed my family and let so many others down. I catch a glimpse of Travis hanging from Sarah's Roomba and Katie clinging to Mary Swiffer. They're both awake enough to hold on for dear life, though I notice Travis's hands are bound with the scarf he was wearing earlier, and there's a good amount of dried blood caked on Katie's temple. most likely from the car crash. I think of Isabella, who vanished into the woods, and feel a stab of hope. Has she gone to find Elizabeth, Binks, and Emily to ask for help? What a scrappy rescue party they would make. Three ghosts, and a Boston Terrier dragging a wagon full of graveyard dirt. But it could be the only chance we've got before the witches bring back Mother and Master, and God knows who else, in exchange for more innocent people. And what'll become of my friends, my family, me? I just hope Isabella is okay wherever she is. The sky seems lighter than an hour ago, and I wonder how far off Dawn is. I try not to think about Mom and Dad and Aunt Danny, but I do, of course. And then I start to feel tears again, cooling on my cheeks as we soar through the frigid night air warmed by the moon's light.
Don't get salt on my dress,
mutters Winifred, shoving me with her shoulder. I gasp, feeling like I'm going to fall, and the fear keeps me silent the rest of the way. The witches navigate through the dark mass of trees around the Sanderson house, land unsteadily, and walk us up the rickety steps to the open door. My knees feel weak, but I've never been so glad to be back on solid ground. Winifred prods a sharp finger into my back, and I shout out, then follow Mary, Katie, Sarah, and Travis into the dim, dirty hovel. I step over my mom's red vintage coat and my aunt's Halloween wig and remember my camera, lost among the melee of the witch's first arrival. Hobbies. Photography seems like a trivial thing now that I'm in survivor mode. I snap back to attention when every candle in the room catches fire with a hungry whoosh, and Winifred tosses me on the ground like dirty laundry. She slams the door shut with a swipe of lightning. A feeling of cold dread tells me that the door won't be opening anytime soon. I'm just recovering when my whole body freezes up, my veins burning. Next thing I know, I've crashed into one of the big skeleton cages that's on the floor. Winifred throws another careless bolt of green lightning in my direction, and the door to the cage slams shut and locks me inside with an electric hiss. Next to me, the other cage lies useless on its side against the wall. It was bent beyond repair in the windstorm fiasco that brought the witches here in the first place. I feel the side of the cage and find a lock. Too bad I never learned how to pick one. Now I know what Principal Taylor and his friend Ernie must have felt like. Trapped, like poor, helpless rats. Across the room, Sarah is tickling Travis and giggling as he thrashes and kicks at her. Mary pushes Katie into a straight-back chair and ties her wrists to its wooden arms.
You smell like roses,
Mary says, nose wrinkling.
It's called soap, Katie says through gritted teeth. I can tell you've never heard of it.
Soap? Says Mary. I love soap. Tomato soap, bat and barley soap. Oh, and children noodle soap.
Katie strains away from Mary's face, groaning. Winifred clutches her spellbook to her chest like a favorite child.
My book. Oh, how I've missed you so, my darling.
She looks up and yells,
Mary, write that table for me.
Yes, Winnie, as you say, Winnie.
Mary hurries over to lift the spellbook's podium. Sarah gives up on her tickle torture of Travis when he realizes it's most helpful to lie as still as a corpse.
Rest up,
she says, stroking his hair.
I'll keep you as a pet until we have to eat you.
Then she tightens the knots that bind his wrists behind his back and leaves him sitting on the floor near Katie, who struggles against her own ties, which shackle her to the cursed ancient chair. Winifred places the book reverentially on top of the podium Mary sets before her. Then she flips it open, pulls the blood moonstone out of her pocket, and sets it on the page. She turns with a clap and a beaming smile. She summons water into the cauldron.
Mary,
she calls shrilly.
Find me dried peppermint and powdered angelica root to strengthen thy spell.
As Mary heads toward Winifred, Katie sticks her foot out to trip her. It's sneaky and savage, and I kinda love it. The witch catches herself, but just barely. She gives Katie a dark look, and Sarah joins her sister's side to glare. But Katie just stares back with equal venom. I should have known that if the Sanderson sisters had one match in Salem, they'd find it in Katie Taylor. Travis leans against Katie's chair, his head resting on the arm. He looks at me, and at first his face is so hopeless and forlorn, I feel like my heart is going to break, if it hasn't already. He quirks an eyebrow at me the way he did in AP U.S. history when I told him I'd be okay at the front of the room. I give a sob of a laugh.
How is it possible? That was just this morning. It's been the longest day of my life, and if I can't save Isabella and my parents and Aunt Danny and all of Salem, and the world, it's going to become one permanent nightmare.
My thoughts are slowly starting to piece themselves back together, and as they do, my body finds the wherewithal to respond to my brain. The end hasn't come. Not yet. There's still time to do something. But what? I sit up a little, leaning against the metal bars of my cage. I have my phone in my pocket. What could that do? And the key ring with the two rusty keys. I manage to fish them out of my pocket, but Sarah pries them out of my hands and waves them.
Winnie, she had these, she exclaims.
Winifred dismisses her with a wave, and Sarah tucks the keys in the loft for safekeeping. Even if those keys didn't fit this lock, I'm all out of fresh ideas. I glare at Winifred.
How can you live with yourselves? I ask.
Just fine, thank you, she says primly. She adds a milky liquid to the cauldron, then, glancing furtively at Mary, takes a swig straight from the bottle.
Maybe if you weren't so horrible, you wouldn't have been killed in the first place, I tell her.
Yes, says Winifred without bothering to look at me.
That worked out so well for my dear, pure of heart sister Elizabeth.
She died, Sarah says helpfully, pausing mid-pirouette. Mary picks through the scattered trash, blowing flakes of dust and glass from salvaged herbs as she collects them. She finds a few unbroken bottles and tastes the contents, occasionally wrinkling her nose. I jump at the touch of something wet against my wrists, but then I hear a familiar voice whisper, "Shh!
Isabella?"
Relief washes over me. I scoot slowly to the side to give Isabella a better angle for hiding. She nibbles delicately on my fabric restraints, careful to avoid nipping my skin. Thankfully, the witches don't seem to notice. Winifred and Mary bustle around the cauldron, filling it up and stoking the fire to make the contents boil quicker.
I've never been happier to see you, I whisper to Isabella.
She pauses and looks up at me with her round, dark eyes, her head tilted at a 45-degree angle. From a dog, it's almost comical. But I've studied her face enough to see past the dog's body she's trapped in. The look Isabella, the real Isabella, is giving me is a never-been-happier-to-see-you-too look. Isabella looks back at the cluster of witches and ducks farther behind me. Her teeth get back to work on my binds, this time with more tugging and desperation.
Thou hasn't got much to say now, hast thou?
Winifred asks, casting her eyes in my direction.
What are you making anyway?
Travis breaks in, pulling attention back to his side of the room.
We are planning to boil a delectable and fortifying brew, explains Winifred, rolling her R's once more.
Ooh, should we add rabbit ears and newt livers? Asks Mary.
It need not be that delectable, Mary.
Sarah has unwound a bracelet from her wrist and is nibbling one end. It looks like a piece of leather or twine, but I have an uncomfortable feeling it's something else entirely.
Didn't we try this potion once before?
Mary asks.
Not the life potion, you dimwit, Winifred chides. A new spell, if your miserable memory serves you.
Winifred points to the spell book with a long, gnarled finger punctuated with the long, sharp fingernail. There are ancient red letters at the top of the page reading, Everlasting Life Elixir.
It requires the Blood Moonstone. We've discussed this, sister.
Winnie, Sarah says, you promised. You promised that after we made the immortality elixir, that we could invite some guests to join us in our celebration.
Billy Butcherson, perhaps? Ooh, or the dock worker's boy, the pretty one. What was his name?
Peter, says Winifred, clearly trying to end her sister's daydreaming as quickly as possible.
Peter, repeats Sarah with a happy sigh.
After we possess everlasting life, we're not just inviting anyone back, you silly girl, says Winifred. We're bringing back Mother and Master in exchange for these brats.
So, that's truly their grand plan, is it? And what, we're the ones who they're going to exchange? I can't say I expected less from them. On the plus side, maybe I'll see my family again.
Poppy, get a grip.
I twist my left wrist carefully and feel the fabric slacken. Slowly, carefully, I work both hands out of their weakened knots and flex my fingers to help blood flow back in. When Winifred turns away to check the quickness of the boil, I hear a crackle of electricity and see a shiver of yellow lightning dance over the cage's lock. It's the same yellow lightning that struck at the cliff that showed us where the blood moonstone was buried, and that struck inside the Sanderson house earlier, and that jumped between Isabella and me at school, making my hair stand on end. If Isabella is the source of the yellow lightning, that would be so badass, especially if she can control it to get the upper hand over her distant witchy relatives. The lock gives way with a soft click, and the door slides open by a centimeter or two. I glance back at Isabella to thank her, but she's already disappeared. I look back at the unlocked cage door, contemplating how to play out my escape without getting quickly caught. Think! Isabella's white fur flashes in the space between Katie and Travis, but then he shifts to the side and she's hidden again. I'm holding my breath as I watch. Please don't get caught.
You know,
says Winifred then, and I see Travis's body stiffen.
Maybe you're right, dear Sarah. Maybe I dismiss you too quickly.
Oh, Sarah says, turning and beaming. Then her voice comes out flat and perplexed.
Right about what?
Off to her side, Mary looks downright miffed.
About having just many old guests to dinner.
A conniving glow comes over Winifred's face, and it gives me the chills.
What good is it to rule without others who will be jealous of our triumphs? Who else dost thou think might turn positively emerald with envy, sisters?
Sarah bounces on her heels, clapping.
Peter!
Well, yes, probably, says Winifred. But no, Sarah deflates.
What about Gunilda Arden, or Matilda Picardi,
Winifred asks, turning to her,
or Isolde Fitzrue, or Frances Harvey.
But those are all witches, says Mary.
Yes, says Winifred, turning to her now.
Precisely.
But Winnie,
Sarah pleads, coming over and taking her elder sister by the arm.
Witches are terrible dinner guests. They try to show off and steal all your turtle teeth.
Yes, they do, don't they? Says Winifred.
But our dearly descended niece has given me great inspiration. First things first, our eternal life potion is almost complete, and we shall finally live forever.
Are you sure, Winnie? Asks Mary.
That's an awful long time.
Silence! We've had plenty of time to form this plan, and we're sticking to it. Now all that's left is gathering souls ripe for the exchange, says Winifred.
How many souls can we bring back? Asks Sarah, delighted.
There are 373 witches on the other side, replies Winnie.
How many mortals would we need?
Asks Sarah, counting on her long fingers.
373, you dolt, says Winifred. We shall drink the potion, cast the spell, free our sisters, and start a new cruel and crafty coven right here in Salem. Besides, Master will enjoy the new playthings, and Mother will enjoy stepping foot back to life.
Master, says Sarah wistfully.
Yes,
Winifred says. As if warming to her own plan, she starts to stir the cauldron and sing softly under her breath.
Everlasting life will be ours,
No more blemishes nor scars. We'll be young and beautiful.
Sarah and Mary chorus.
Young and beautiful.
No more trip nor daft delay, sings Winifred. We're here to stay.
A snake of red smoke lances out of the brew, then dissipates. The cauldron simmers, and a blood-red mist churns across its thickly bubbling contents. Winifred hands the ladle to Mary, who continues to stir the cauldron. Winifred pulls a knobby bone-hilted dagger from her robes, dips it into the cauldron, and licks the blade.
Tasty,
she exclaims. Winifred then consults her spellbook.
Ah, the trusty everlasting life elixir. Let's see.
She runs her long, crooked talon of a finger down the yellowed page and stops on instructions that she reads aloud.
Lastly, add blood moonstone.
With a proud purse of her lips, Winifred lifts the stone and carries it to the cauldron. She pauses at my cage.
Now, whose life force shall we sup on first?
She leans forward to give me a wide, ugly smile through the iron bars.
I say you, she teases. You remind me of a girl I once tried to eat. I'm afraid I'm a little tough for your palate, witch breath, I growl.
Then I push myself up and forward in one fluid motion, grabbing onto the bars of the door without letting them stop me. The door swings open, knocking Winifred off balance. The blood moonstone falls from her clawed hand, skitters away, and comes to a stop in a slimy pile of wilted herbs. I quickly snatch it up and shove it into the pocket of my jeans. There's a shout, and I turn to see Mary falling. She was coming after me with a frying pan, but Isabella sunk her teeth deep into the witch's plump calf. Isabella jumps onto Mary's prone body, scrabbling over her shoulders and tangled hair. Travis is at my side. Katie has already gotten the front door open.
This way,
she shouts. Travis and I run toward her.
The spell book, calls Isabella.
I turn, but the podium holding the open spell book is on the other side of the room. Bolting for it would mean I'd risk getting caught again.
Poppy, hurry, says Katie.
I gun it past her, with Travis and Isabella racing beside me until we're down the steps, out of the front yard, and in the woods. We take cover behind a downed tree. Seconds later, the sisters emerge from the house. Winifred clutches her spellbook, whose eye swivels, searching for us. We duck back down.
Sisters, leave them.
We mustn't abandon our everlasting life elixir, I hear Winifred instruct her sisters.
Besides, we'll get the stone back soon, with a little help.
I peer up to watch Winifred and her sisters turn and head back into the house. Isabella stares up at me and Travis.
Please tell me one of you has the stone.
I do, I say, patting my pocket.
You rock, Pops, says Travis.
But neither of us laughs like we'd normally do. We're both still too frazzled.
Good work, Poppy.
Isabella paces the length of the fallen tree and back.
Now what?
I don't know, but it's not long before the zombies are back, says Katie.
I don't think dogs can cry,
Isabella says softly.
But I want to.
We'll figure it out, I say. Isabella shakes her head vehemently, then takes a deep breath.
How?
She grumbles.
We'll find Elizabeth, I say. She'll know what to do. Besides, we have the stone. They can't cast the immortality spell without it.
And we just have to find a way to break it to undo the exchange spell, right?
Easier said than done, Travis says. Besides, it sounds like they're about to cast another exchange spell using the book. You're right, the witches. We can't destroy the moonstone ourselves. And more people are at risk of being... And everything will become permanent,
stammers Isabella. I've never seen her so shaken. I just want to comfort her.
Isabella, I say softly, trust me, we'll be okay.
She shivers, then nods.
We'll find Elizabeth, she says. We have the stone. We'll break it. Then all their spells will be undone.
It sounds like she actually believes it.
Right. And then we'll send those thirsty witches back to hell,
Travis adds.
And turn you back into a human, says Katie.
Isabella looks up at me, searching my face. I'm not exactly sure what she's looking for, but I nod and give a brave smile like I know she'd do for me.
We will, I say, surprised at how calm and confident I am, despite everything.
Thanks, Poppy, Isabella says. I needed that.
I feel a warmth in my heart. Travis and Katie are both watching us. Anytime, I tell Isabella, surprised at how tender I sound.
Yeah,
she says. She sounds a little more confident this time.
We didn't get this far without each other. We have each other's backs. We make solid plans. We get things done.
Exactly, I say. Now let's go find Elizabeth. We need her advice.
Isabella turns and hurries down the trunk of the tree, leaping over the roots and into the deep pile of leaves. She shakes them off, and we follow her through the woods to the road, then across it to the graveyard, dodging from shadow to shadow so that no prowling zombie teens or flying witches can spot us. As I'm quietly closing the gate behind us, Katie leans in.
I'm not good at this, she says, but I'm sorry. Again.
What? I ask.
I really want you to know that I am so, so sorry for being a total witch to you. You didn't deserve it. I never want to be a mean girl again. That is, if I get the chance to live long enough to redeem myself.
Isabella is far ahead already, loping up the hill toward the chapel, with Travis not far behind her.
The truth is, I think I was just jealous that you and Bella started hanging out, and she kind of ditched me. It hurt, to be honest.
She runs a hand through her hair.
We follow the others to the clearing. And then when I overheard you telling her about the Sanderson story, that was my chance to be a total mean girl. I feel like such a jerk.
It's just your family seemed perfect. And hearing something so weird about them, no offense, made me feel better about my own family.
As you know, it's hard having a parent in charge of your high school. And it's harder having a single parent who barely says two words to you because he's too busy making sure the windows and doors are locked. Now I know why. He was witch-proofing the house.
I nod. I think about my parents again. How good Mom was at prepping the house for the party. And how she and Dad and even Aunt Danny had busted out Halloween costumes for the first time since I was 9 or 10. For the first time since they told me about the Sandersons. I realized that maybe I haven't been protecting my family's secret this whole time. I've just been protecting myself from ridicule. And that maybe the only Denison who hates Halloween is me.
I forgive you. And hey, I owe my parents and aunt an apology too, I say.
Yeah, she says thoughtfully. And I owe my dad one. He was just trying to protect me.
I sigh dramatically. Is this what growing up feels like?
I hope not. I feel like I've been microwaved and lived to tell the tale.
Katie laughs hard at that. She stops walking to offer me an open palm.
Truce?
She asks. I look from her hand to her face, where a few strands of blue hair are sticking to her jaw. I accept her handshake, and we both hurry up the road and toward the chapel. Luckily, the graveyard is zombie-free. Just ghosts. And friendly ones at that. Binks is sitting on the chapel's bottom step. Emily has created a hopscotch board from broken sticks, and she tosses a pebble and skips after it, balancing on one foot as she leans forward to scoop the stone back up.
I never thought I'd be so happy to see ghosts in a graveyard, Travis exclaims.
We have good news and bad news, Isabella says.
What's the bad news?
Binks asks, rising. He and Emily glide toward us. Elizabeth appears in the doorway of the chapel, but only watches us, her face expressionless. Isabella glances at me, wagging her tail. Her eyes drop to my hand, which is still grasping Katie's, and she seems to falter. She glances at my face, then turns back to the ghosts. I give Katie's hand a gentle squeeze and let go of it, wrapping my arms around myself.
The Sanderson sisters have the spell book,
and are going to cast the exchange spell to trade living souls for all the dead witches in hell, Isabella says. Binks gapes at us, putting a hand on Emily's shoulder.
What's the good news?
I take the moonstone from my pocket and hold it up for everyone to see. Elizabeth nods, then turns to Binks with a look of determination. She takes the words right out of my mouth,
that it isn't over yet.
Electric or treat?
How couldst thou lose the stone?
Winifred demands, blaming her sisters.
Well, Winnie, Sarah says, twisting her own fingers, thou wert there also.
This earns her 2 arched eyebrows from Winifred. Winifred may have been angrier at another point in her life, but the memory isn't coming to her in this particular moment. They've lost the Blood Moonstone as well as their supper, and she isn't getting any younger. She slams her book onto the wooden planks. It emits a whimper that only she can hear. The sound makes her even angrier at herself. She whirls on her sisters.
Never in my life have I met such blundering, club-clawed stamp crabs, she says.
Sarah and Mary cower and busy themselves at the cauldron, taking turns stirring the incomplete potion, one more gracefully than the other. After a pause, Winifred turns her back on Sarah and Mary, afraid that she'll wield her lightning magic in their direction if either sister opens her hopeless mouth. Slowly, Winifred lifts the cover of her book and smooths an apologetic palm over its title page, then holds her hand over the pages and takes a deep breath. The pages flip of their own accord. When the exchange spell that Winifred desires appears, the pages settle and still. She leans close to the book, studying the text of the spell in the dark. Behind her, her sisters lean forward too.
Bring me some mortals, Winifred says to them, eyes fixed on the window.
Children?
Asks Mary.
It matters not to me, says Winifred, grinning.
Any mortal will do.
Sarah, summon old and young alike.
Travis and Binks emerge from the groundskeeper's shed and approach us with a big steel toolbox.
Something in here's got to be able to crush this stone, says Travis.
He takes a hammer to the stone, and then a pair of pliers, and then he tries to crush it by over-tightening a clamp. But when he loosens it again, the stone bounces out into his palm, completely unscathed.
Does a blacksmith still reside in Salem? Asks Elizabeth. Perhaps he could fire the stone and break it with his mallet.
No, says Katie sadly. The blacksmith unemployment rate became untenable about a century ago.
We're wasting our time, I say. It'll be dawn soon. The sky is still dark and the moon is still high.
She's right, says Isabella. We've been running around for hours, and we don't even know how to break the stone.
I just really wish we had the spell book,
Isabella says, swiping at her own head with a front paw.
I know we're not supposed to use it, but wouldn't it be better than not having it?
I'm not sure, says Elizabeth, looking nervous.
I've told you my sister's book can't be trusted. It sees all and knows no allegiance except to Winifred, and I know its contents all too well.
The exchange spell is single use, meaning it can only be used on the same person once. So even if you incanted it, it would not work on them.
So destroying the moonstone really is our only hope.
I keep staring at the horizon, where the black sky fades into a charcoal-colored sea. My heart aches.
But morning is coming, I say quietly. A fresh wave of despair rushes over me.
I turn to Binks. Can I talk to my family again?
I need to tell them I'm sorry.
We don't have time, says Katie,
pacing frantically in front of the chapel.
And besides, you can't think like that. We can't give up. Not yet.
Poppy, she's right, says Isabella. We have to act quickly.
Act quickly, we must.
Elizabeth slowly descends the chapel steps,
It isn't time yet to lose hope. The blood moon is bloodiest before the dawn.
Did she seriously just say that?
Quips Katie. I can't help cracking a smile. Elizabeth kneels down in front of Isabella and touches her small round head lovingly, as if touching a human cheek.
I was not given the chance to watch my daughter Ismay grow up, she tells her. But I hope that your kindness and bravery come from her.
You aren't afraid to find out who you are. She tips her head to the side. Though we are family by blood, you come from many places, Isabella. When I was alive, I was always afraid that if I were myself, no one would accept me. So instead, I pretended to be the person I believed everyone, or everyone I cared about, wanted me to be. I was a baker, and kept my life and my family hidden for fear of persecution. Travis slips an arm over my shoulders and the other over Katie's.
I thought we couldn't waste any time,
he murmurs.
Shh, I hiss. Let Isabella have her moment.
In the end, says Elizabeth, my pretense didn't matter much. The spellbook betrayed me, and the rest is history. You're a brave young woman, Isabella, and you are smart, and you are curious. Those are good and dangerous things. But you are also a witch, and that is a good and dangerous thing on its own. Isabella backs away.
I'm not, she says.
You've seen your powers today, says Elizabeth softly.
The lightning? That was an accident. That isn't me, says Isabella.
That's what I believed back then, says Elizabeth, laying both hands across her lap. I didn't want to be a witch, because I didn't want to turn into my sisters. Greedy and selfish and hungry for blood in more ways than one. I didn't end up like them, but I still had my life stolen from me. I was as much a witch then as you are now. But you have shown me that you can be a witch and even a Sanderson without being cruel.
Is there going to be a blood pact or fire dancing or something? Katie whispers. 'Cause I'm here for that.
Travis chuckles, and I throw them a pinched look and shake my head in mock disappointment.
Heartless, I say. Both of you?
Katie winks at me, and Travis offers her a fist bump.
We sent Poppy's family to hell,
Isabella chokes out, drawing our attention back to her and Elizabeth.
And I'm a dog.
I feel myself tearing up at her words.
Oh, Ducky, says Elizabeth affectionately.
None of that is any of your faults. The day Emily died, I blamed myself for not going after her. I'd seen her that morning lured to the woods by my sister's spell, but I hadn't realized just what terrible magic was at work. If I'd just gone after her, I could have saved her, and saved Thackeray too. If I had just stood up to my sisters, I could have driven them from town and no one in Salem would have been hurt. I felt a tremendous guilt, and it was easier to sit with that guilt and hide than to defend myself. Now I can help make things right. We all can. Isabella looks hopefully at Elizabeth. Behind them, Emily and Binks smile wanly.
We all make mistakes, Poppet, says Elizabeth. The trick is learning how to move past them, and when you can, to use them to your advantage.
She pauses and offers both of her palms to Isabella.
Now it's my turn, she adds.
Isabella rises up on her back legs and places one paw in each of her ancestors' hands.
While you were away, says Elizabeth, I was chatting with Poppy's family, and they had an idea for how to turn you back into a human that doesn't involve the spellbook. I don't know if it'll work, but let me try it.
I want to ask if they're okay, but there's a crackle in the air and the wind seems to shift. As Travis, Katie, and I look on, a spark of searing white electricity snakes around Elizabeth's hands and Isabella's paws. The light fizzles and fades, then reappears, swirling around Elizabeth's left wrist and upper arm before piercing her shoulder and disappearing. Another snaking line of electricity, this time yellow, loops around Isabella's legs and body, sinking into the base of her spine.
Soon, bolts of bright electricity have twined themselves around the two witches like a single glowing rope that sparks and snaps and disappears. Isabella's body starts to shift, growing and twisting. Thick curls sprout from her head and her arms lengthen, fur retreating and skin shifting. The light around her is so bright, I have to look away. There's an explosion of sparks, and the light snuffs out. I look back, ghosts of the rope lights squiggling through my vision. Isabella has transformed back into a human. She's kneeling in front of Elizabeth, their hands tightly clasped. Isabella is wearing her all-white Athena costume, which by now is worse for wear. She looks down at her hands, flexing her fingers for a moment as if she can't believe her eyes. Then she turns to us, beaming. I can't begin to describe how happy I am. Isabella jumps up and throws her arms around me, squealing, "Hands, not paws!" I want to tell her I'm glad she's back, but I realize she was never really gone. I'm at a loss for what to say to her. All I can do is smile. She gives me a tight squeeze and my heart soars. Then we part, and she runs over to hug Travis, who's grinning broadly.
Good to have you back, Dog Breath, he says.
Aunt Danny would reel at that nickname.
Thanks,
Isabella replies, patting him playfully on the shoulder. She turns and pulls Katie into a long hug. At first, a look of surprise passes over Katie's face, but then she puts her arms tightly around Isabella, too, and smiles. Neither girl says anything, but I see a thousand versions of I'm sorry, and I missed you, and I forgive you pass between them through that hug. It makes me smile. Isabella pulls away, and Katie lifts her arm so Isabella can do a twirl as I cheer her on.
Take a bow,
Katie laughs. Isabella stops in front of Elizabeth and pauses to catch her breath.
Thank you, Isabella exclaims. I mean, I wish you'd done it a bit sooner.
I only wish I had thought of it myself, Elizabeth says. Magic isn't always as simple as reading a spell. It wasn't until Poppy's mother asked if you had lightning powers, too, that I realized there might be a way to transform you back without the spell book's help. Luckily, it worked. She pauses, and a little smile appears on her face.
Thank goodness, cries Isabella. Seriously,
I add. If your lightning magic is as strong as I think it is, continues Elizabeth, you'll need to learn how to control it. Watch. She lifts her hands over her head, and white sparks crackle between her fingers, then blossom overhead in a dazzling miniature firework. Isabella bites her lips and holds out her own hands.
What if I can't do it? She asks.
There's nothing to do. Elizabeth touches Isabella's arms and elbows, making small corrections and helping her relax. Now, she says softly, leaning over Isabella's shoulder, breathe deep, and yellow lightning flies from Isabella's hands, making a great crack and releasing a fireball that bursts in midair. The recoil sends her backward, shooting right through Elizabeth and crashing into me. I react with just enough time to steady myself and keep us both from toppling over.
Well, okay, I say. Thanks for always having my back, says Isabella.
She laughs and takes a step backward.
Wait till Stanford hears about this,
she says, watching yellow sparks jump from her fingers. I snort, and Katie smiles. Elizabeth just looks perplexed.
This explains the static and all the zaps of electricity that kept happening to us today, I tell Isabella. It all makes sense.
An idea hits me. Hey, can you zap the stone? Maybe that'll break it.
Always full of ideas, Poppy. I have always liked that about you. Let me give it a try, says Isabella.
Elizabeth's expression changes to one of worry. I place the moonstone down on the grass, and Isabella stares hard at it and takes aim. Bolts of yellow lightning crackle around her knuckles like fiery wires.
Stop!
Elizabeth exclaims, standing between the stone and Isabella. Isabella startles and releases her fist. The bolt
ricochets and hits a nearby tombstone with a skull and crossbones, which cracks and smokes.
What? Why?
She asks, suddenly frazzled.
Yeah, says Travis, using Isabella's lightning magic to zap